Jaya Jagannath Chakana Jaya Balade Jaya Subhaja Jaya Jaya Rukmini Dogadish Rukmini Dogadish Rukmini Dogadish Rukmini Dogadish Jaya Prabhupada Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Prabhupada Jaya 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 Prabhupada 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Jaya Prabhupada Prabhupada Prabhupada, Jaya, Jaya, Prabhupada. Jam Vishnu Pada Panamahamsa Parila Jakcharya Ashtadra Satta Shri Shrima. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Shira Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Fantacharya, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Shira Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jayam Vishnu Pada Panamahamsa Parila Jakcharya Ashtadra Satta Shri Shrima. His Divine Grace Shira Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Shri Hari Rastaku Ki Jai. Prince Kaho, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadra, Sri Vasade Gola Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinang Shyamakum Radhakum Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Shri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Shri Jagannapuri Dham Ki Jai Ganga Mai Chamuna Mai Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhaktavinda Ki Jai Transcendental Book Distribution Ki Jai Transcendental Prasadam Distribution Ki Jai Hare Rama Sanketan Ki Jai ISKCON Yutvagadam Ki Jai Nitai Gaura Pramanandi Haribo 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 O Kroris Tri Sambodhi Varis Hare Krishna O Kroris Tri Sambodhi Varis Hare Krishna O Kroris Tri Sambodhi Varis Hare Krishna O Kroris Tri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayana Namaskritya Narachaiva Narottamam Devin Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Udit Dayet Nasta Prayeshu Abhadrashu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavadi Utamashloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. So reading from Krishna book, first chapter. The Advent of Lord Krishna. Once the world was overburdened by the unnecessary defense force of different kings, who were actually demons, but were posing themselves as the loyal order. At that time, the whole world became perturbed, and the predominating deity of this earth, known as Bhumi, went to see Lord Brahma to tell of her calamities due to the demoniac kings. Bhumi assumed the shape of a cow and presented herself before Lord Brahma with tears in her eyes. She was bereaved and was weeping just to invoke the Lord's compassion. She related the calamitous position of the earth. And after hearing this, Lord Brahma became much aggrieved and at once started for the ocean of milk, where Lord Vishnu resides. Lord Brahma was accompanied by all the demigods, headed by Lord Shiva, and Bhumi also followed. Arriving on the shore of the milk ocean, Lord Brahma began to pacify Lord Vishnu, who had formerly saved the earthly planet by assuming the transcendental form of a bull. In the Vedic mantras, there's a particular type of prayer called Purusha Sukta. Generally, the demigods offer their obeisances unto Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by chanting the Purusha Sukta. It is understood herein that the predominating deity of every planet can see the Supreme Lord of this universe, Brahma, whenever there is some disturbance on his planet. And Brahma can approach the Supreme Lord Vishnu not by seeing him directly, but by standing on the shore of the ocean of milk. There's a planet within this universe called Svetadvip, and on that planet, there's an ocean of milk. It is understood from various Vedic literatures that just as there's an ocean of salt water on this planet, there are various kinds of oceans on other planets. Somewhere there's an ocean of milk, somewhere there's an ocean of oil, and somewhere there's an ocean of liquor and many other types of liquids. The Purusha Sukta is the standard prayer which the demigods recite to appease the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shirodaksha Vishnu. Because he is lying on the ocean of milk, he is called Shirodaksha Vishnu. He is the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through whom all the incarnations within universe appear. So that means Lord Nrisimhadev, Lord Ram, Lord Parashuram, they are all coming from Shirodaksha Vishnu. So after the demigods offered the Purusha Sukta prayer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they apparently heard no response. Then Lord Brahma personally sat in meditation, and there was a message transmission from Lord Vishnu to Brahma. Brahma then broadcast the message to the demigods. That is the system of receiving Vedic knowledge. The Vedic knowledge is received first by Brahma from the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the medium of the heart. As stated in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Tena Brahma Hidaya Adi Kavaye. The transcendental knowledge of the Vedas was transmitted to Lord Brahma through the heart. Here also, in the same way, only Brahma could understand the message transmitted by Lord Vishnu, and he broadcast it to the demigods for their immediate action. The message was this: the Supreme Personality of Godhead would appear on the earth very soon along with his supreme powerful potencies. And as long as he remained on the earth planet to execute his mission of annihilating the demons and establishing the devotees. So it reminds me a verse from the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna is saying, Parichanaya sadhu nam vinashaya cha dushkritam dhamma sanstapanataya sambhavame yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principle of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So similarly, Prabhupada said here that Krishna will appear to annihilate the demons and establishing the devotees. The demigods should also remain there to assist him. They should all immediately take birth in the family of Yadu dynasty. You see, from here we could also understand when Lord Krishna appeared on this earthly planet, Lord Krishna is not coming on his own. He's not coming alone. And actually, all the other demigods will accompany him to come. It's just like, you know, when a king or a president go to visit somewhere, you know, all the ministers, the soldiers will also accompany him. So similarly, this is the same thing with Lord Krishna. Yeah. So all the demigods, they should all immediately take birth in the family of the Yadu dynasty, wherein the Lord would also appear in due course of time. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna would personally appear as the son of Vasudeva. Before his appearance, all the demigods along with their wives should appear in different pious family in the world just to assist the Lord in executing his mission. The exact word used here is tapriyatam, which means the demigods should appear on the earth in order to please the Lord. In other words, any living entity who lives only to satisfy the Lord is a demigod. The demigods were further informed that Ananta, the plenary portion of Lord Krishna, who is maintaining the universal planets by extending his millions of hoods, would also appear on earth before Lord Krishna's appearance. They were also informed that the external potency of Vishnu, Maya, with whom all the conditioned souls were enamored, would also appear by the order of the Supreme Lord, just to execute his purpose. After instructing and pacifying all the demigods, as well as Bhumi, with sweet words, Lord Brahma, the father of all Prajapatis, or progenitors of the universal population, departed for his own abode, the highest material planet called Brahmaloka. The leader of the Yadu dynasty, King Surasena, was ruling over the country known as Mathura, wherein lies the city of Mathura. As well as the district known as Surasena, which was named after him. On account of the rule of King Surasena, Mathura became the capital city of all the kings of the Yadus. Mathura was also made the capital of the kings of the Yadu dynasty because the Yadus were a very pious family and knew that Mathura is the place where Lord Sri Krishna lives eternally, just as he also lives in Dwarka. Once upon a time, Vasudeva, the son of Surasena, just after marrying Devaki, was going home on his chariot with his newly wedded wife. The father of Devaki, known as Devaka, had contributed a sufficient dowry because he was very affectionate toward his daughter. He had contributed hundreds of chariots completely decorated with gold equipment. At that time, Kamsa, the son of Ugrasena, in order to please his sister Devaki, had voluntarily taken the reins of the horses of Vasudeva's chariot and was driving. According to the custom of the Vedic civilization, when a girl is married, the brother takes the sister and brother-in-law to their home, because the newly married girl may feel too much separation from her father's family. The brother goes with her until she reaches her father's in-law's house. The full dowry contributed by Dwarka was as follows: 400 elephants fully decorated with golden garlands, 15,000 decorated horses, and 1,800 chariots. He also arranged for 200 beautiful girls to follow his daughter. The Kshatriya system of marriage, still current in India, dictates that when a Kshatriya is married, a few dozen of bride's young girlfriend, in addition to the bride, go to the house of the king. The followers of the queen are called maidservants, but actually they act as friends of the queen. This practice is prevalent from time immemorial, traceable at least to the time before the advent of Lord Krishna 5,000 years ago. So Vasudeva brought home another 200 beautiful girls along with his wife Devaki. While the bride and bridegroom were passing along on the chariot, there were different kinds of musical instruments playing to indicate the auspicious moment. There were conch shell, bugles, drums, and kettle drums combined together. They were vibrating a nice concert. So this reminds me the traditional marriage ceremony in China. So in this regard, I want to show a little bit, a short video, describing this kind of marriage ceremony. Yeah. Amber, can you show me? Like that. The internet speed is slow. Sorry. So it's like basic is like that, So from here we could understand that 5,000 years ago, actually, the Vedic culture is everywhere in the world, Yeah, even in China, you can see, something like the Vedic, marriage ceremonies. And unfortunately, as Kali Yuga progressed, we can't see this anymore. But still, in the countryside, sometimes in China, you can see some ceremony like that. What? Inside the pipe is the bride. The bride is sitting on the horse, something like that. With all kinds of music instruments, music exactly like what is describing here in Devaki's marriage ceremony. Yeah. So the procession was passing very pleasingly, and Kamsa was driving the chariot, when suddenly there was a miraculous sound vibrated from the sky, which especially announced to Kamsa, "Kamsa, you are such a fool. You are driving the chariot of your sister and your brother-in-law, but you do not know that the eighth child of this sister will kill you. Kamsa was the son of Ugrasena of the Bhoja dynasty. It is said that Kamsa was the most demoniac of all Bhoja dynasty king. Immediately after hearing the prophecy from the sky, he caught hold of Devaki's hair and was just about to kill her with his sword. Vasudeva was astonished at Kamsa's behavior, and in order to pacify the cruel, shameless brother-in-law, he began to speak as follows with great reason and evidence. He said, "My dear brother-in-law Kamsa, you are the most famous king of the Bhoja dynasty, and people know that you are the greatest warrior and a valiant king. How is it that you are so infuriated that you are prepared to kill a woman who is your own sister at the auspicious time of her marriage? Why should you be so much afraid of death? Death is already born along with your birth. From the very day you took your birth, you began to die. Suppose you are 25 years old, that means you have already died 25 years. Every moment, every second, you are dying. Why then should you be so much afraid of death? Final death is inevitable. You may die either today or in 100 years. You cannot avoid death. Why should you be so much afraid?" So that's why here, you know, in America, we always heard the saying that as sure as death. Yeah, nothing is so sure as death in this material world. Right. So why should you be so much afraid? Actually, death means annihilation of the present body. As soon as the present body stops functioning and mixes with the five elements of material nature, the living entity within the body accepts another body according to his present actions and reactions. It is just like when a man walks on the street, he puts forward his foot, and when he is confident that his foot is situated on sound ground, he lifts the other foot. In this way, one after another, the body changes and the soul transmigrates. It also reminds me of a verse from the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna, you know, says, "Dehi nosmi yata dehe komanan yovanan jana tatta dehan tara prabdir dirastacha namuhyati." Krishna says, as the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. So, let's continue, huh? "See how the plant worms change from one twig to another so carefully. Similarly, the living entity changes his body as soon as the higher authorities decide on his next body. As long as the living entity is conditioned within this material world, he must take material bodies one after another. His next particular body is offered by the laws of nature, according to the actions and reactions of this life. This body is exactly like one of the bodies which we always see in dreams. During our dream of sleep, we create so many bodies according to mental creation. We have seen gold, and we have also seen a mountain. So in a dream, we can see a golden mountain by combining the two ideas. Sometimes in dreams, we see that we have a body which is flying in the sky. And at that time, we completely forget our present body. Similarly, these bodies are changing. When you have one body, you forget the past body. During a dream, we may make contact with so many new kinds of bodies. But when we are awake, we forget them all. And actually, these material bodies are the creations of our own mental activities. But at the present moment, we do not recollect our past bodies. The nature of the mind is flickering. Chanchana, flickering, yeah. Sometimes it accepts something and immediately it rejects the same thing. Accepting and rejecting is the process of the mind in contact with the five objects of the sense gratification: form, taste, smell, sound, and the touch. In its speculative way, the mind comes in touch with the object of the sense gratification, and when the living entity desires a particular type of body, he gets it. Therefore, the body is an offering by the laws of material nature. The living entity accepts a body and comes out again into the material world to endure or suffer according to the construction of the body. Unless we have a particular type of body, we cannot endure or suffer according to our mental proclivities inherited from the previous life. The particular type of body is actually offered to us according to our mental condition at the time of death. That's why it is also said in the Bhagavad Gita, yang yang vapi smanam bhavam tyajanti ante kalevanam tam tam evaiti kunteya sadada bhava bhavita. Krishna says that whatever state of consciousness at the time of death, so that will determine our next birth. So that means the consciousness at the time of death determines, you know, our next birth, or what kind of body we are going to get in the next life. The luminous planets like the sun, moon, or stars reflect themselves in different types of reservoirs, like water, oil, or ghee. The reflection moves according to the movement of the reservoir. The reflection of the moon is on the water, and the moving water makes the moon also appear to be moving. But actually, the moon is not moving. Similarly, by mental concoction, the living entity attains different kinds of bodies, although actually he has no connection with such bodies. But on account of illusion, being enhanced by the influence of Maya, the living entity thinks that he belongs to a particular type of body. That is the way of conditioned life. Suppose a living entity is now in a human form of body, he thinks that he belongs to the human community, or a particular country, or particular place. He identifies himself in that way and unnecessarily prepares for another body, which is not required by him. Such desires and mental concoctions are the cause of different types of bodies. The covering influence of material nature is so strong that the living entity is satisfied in whatever body he gets, and he identifies with that body with great pleasure. You know, it also reminds me a story of King Indra in this regard. You know, there was one time, you know, King Indra was cursed to become a hawk. And he was really very much enjoyed his life with his hawk wife and hawk kids like that, you know. But one day Lord Brahma, you know, find out that there was no king of heaven. So Brahma realized that King Indra was cursed to become a hawk. So Brahma personally come to King Indra in the form of hawk and asking, "Hey, you should go back to your position. You are the king of heaven. Why you are wasting your time here?" But you know, instead of going back to his position as a king of heaven, Indra said, "I have my, you know, hawk wife, hawk kids here. I'm very happy here. Why should I go?" Yeah, because he's so much allured by the, material energy. It reminds that, you know. "Therefore, I beg to request you not to be overwhelmed by the dictation of your mind and the body." Vasudeva thus requested Kamsa not to be envious of his newly married sister. "One should not be envious of anyone, because envy is the cause of fear both in this world and in the next. When one is before Yamaraj, the lord of punishment after death." Vasudeva appealed to Kamsa on behalf of Devaki, stating that she was his younger sister. He also appealed at an auspicious moment, at the time of marriage. A younger sister or brother is supposed to be protected as one's... A younger sister or brother is supposed to be protected as one's child. You know, in China, we were saying 长兄如父. That means, you know, the older brother in the family is actually like your father. So he's always protecting the younger sisters and younger brothers like that, you know. Yeah. That is the Chinese tradition culture, you know, like that, you know. "The position is overall so delicate," Vasudeva reasoned, "that if you kill her, it will go against your high reputation." In this way, Vasudeva tried to pacify Kamsa by good instruction as well as by philosophical discrimination. But Kamsa was not to be pacified because his association was demoniac. Because of his demoniac association, he was a demon, although born in a very high royal family. It also reminds me of a saying in China, 近朱者赤,近墨者黑. That means if you are associated with the red people, ultimately you will become a red people. And similarly, if you are associated with a black, always associated with black people, you will become a black people ultimately. Here it is said that Kamsa, because of, you know, the association with demoniac people, so ultimately he became a demon, although he was born in a high loyal family. So similarly, if we can stay association with devotees, with the sainted persons, you know, we will become devotees also. Yeah. Because we will take the qualities of those who we are associated with. Yeah. So a demon never cares for any good instruction. He is just like a determined thief. One can give him moral instruction, but it will not be effective. Similarly, those who are demoniac or atheistic by nature can hardly assimilate any good instruction, however authorized it may be. That is the difference between demigods and demons. Those who can accept good instruction and try to live their life in that way are called demigods. And those who are unable to take such good instruction are called demons. Failing in his attempt to pacify Kamsa, Vasudeva wondered how he would protect his wife, Devaki. When there is imminent danger, an intelligent person should try to avoid the dangerous position as far as possible. But if, in spite of endeavoring by all intelligence, one fails to avoid the dangerous position, there is no fault on his part. One should try his best to execute his duties. But if the attempt fails, he is not at fault. Vasudev thought of his wife as follows. For the present, let me save the life of Devaki. Then later on, if there are children, I shall see how to save them. He further thought, if in the future I get a child who can kill Kamsa, just as Kamsa is thinking, then both Devaki and the child will be saved, because the law of providence is inconceivable. But now, some way or other, let me save the life of Devaki. It's almost time. Should I finish the purple? Okay. There is no certainty how a living entity contacts a certain type of body, just as there is no certainty how a blazing fire comes in contact with a certain type of wood in the forest. When there is a forest fire, it is experienced that the blazing fire sometimes dips over one tree and catches another by the influence of the wind. Similarly, a living entity may be very careful in the matter of executing his duty, but it is still very difficult for him to know what type of body he is going to get in the next life. Maharaj Bharat was very faithfully executing his duties of self-realization, but by chance he develops a temporary affection for the deer. And in his next life, he had to accept the body of a deer. Here in America, I saw so many people, they have a pet dogs. So from here we could understand there is danger for these people who have pet dogs. You know, they're going to take a birth as a dog, you know. Yeah, the danger is there, you see. Vasudev, after deliberating on how to save his wife, began to speak to Kamsa with great respect, although Kamsa was the most sinful man. Sometimes it happens that the most virtuous person like Vasudev has to flatter a person like Kamsa, a most vicious person. That is the way of all diplomatic transactions. Although Vasudev was deeply aggrieved, he smiled outwardly. He addressed the shameless Kamsa in that way because he was so atrocious. Vasudev said to Kamsa, "My dear brother-in-law, please consider that you have no danger from your sister. You are awaiting some danger because you have heard a prophetic voice in the sky. But the danger is to come from the sons of your sister, who are not present now. And who knows, there may or may not be sons in the future. Considering all this, you are safe for the present. Nor is there cause of fear from your sister. If there are any sons born of her, I promise I shall present all of them to you for necessary action." Kamsa knew the value of Vasudev's words of honor, and he was convinced by his argument. For the time being, he desisted for the heinous killing of his sister. Thus Vasudev was pleased and praised the decision of Kamsa. In this way, he returned to his home. Each year thereafter, in due course of time, Devaki gave birth to a child. Thus, she gave birth to 8 male children, as well as 1 daughter. When the first son was born, Vasudev kept his words of honor and immediately brought the child before Kamsa. It is said that Vasudev was very much elevated and famous for his word of honor, and he wanted to maintain this fame. Although it was very painful for Vasudev to hand over the newly born child, Kamsa was very glad to receive him, but he became a little compassionate with the behavior of Vasudev. This event is very exemplary For a great soul like Vasudev, there's nothing considered to be painful in the course of discharging one's duty. A learned person like Vasudev carries out his duty without hesitation. Yeah, just like the the devotees. Even it's really freezing cold winter, they will take shower in the morning. A household wife, even it is very hot in the summer, she will go to the kitchen and cook, So that's why it is said here, there's nothing considered to be painful in the course of discharging one's duty, because everyone is duty-bound in this material world. Yeah. A learned person like Vasudev carries out his duty without hesitation. On the other hand, a demon like Kamsa never hesitates in committing any abominable action. It is said, therefore, that a sainted person can tolerate all kinds of miserable conditions of life. A learned man can discharge his duty without awaiting favorable circumstances. A heinous person like Kamsa can act in any simple way, and a devotee can sacrifice everything to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It also reminds me that, when Prabhupada met his Guru Maharaj, Śrīla Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave him order that you should preach this Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking country. And at that time, Prabhupada said, our India, we are still under the, control of British. How can we, how can any others, follow our teachings? Prabhupada, he said, right now the circumstance is not favorable. Yeah. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, Krishna preaching Krishna consciousness, doesn't depend on the favorable circumstances or not. You should just go and preach. Yeah, it reminds me that Kamsa became satisfied by the action of Vasudev. He was surprised to see Vasudev keeping his promise. And being compassionate upon him and pleased, he began to speak as follows. My dear Vasudev, you need not present this child to me. I am not in danger from this child. I have heard that the eighth child born of you and Devaki will kill me. Why should I accept this child unnecessarily? You can take him back. When Vasudev was returning home with his firstborn child, although he was pleased by the behavior of Kamsa, he could not believe in him because he knew that Kamsa was uncontrolled. An atheistic person cannot be firm in his word of honor. One who cannot control the senses cannot be sturdy in his determination. The great politician Chanakya Pandit said, "Never put your trust in a diplomat or a woman." Those who are addicted to unrestricted sense gratification can never be truthful, nor can they be trusted with any faith. At that time, the great sage Narada came to Kamsa. He was informed of Kamsa's becoming compassionate to Vasudev and returning his firstborn child. Narada was very eager to accelerate the descent of Lord Krishna as soon as possible. He therefore informed Kamsa that in Vrindavan, personalities like Nanda Maharaj and all the other cowherd men and their wives, and on the other side Vasudev, his father Surasena, and all his relatives born in the family of Vishnu of the Yadu dynasty, along with all other friends and well-wishers, were actually demigods. Narada warned Kamsa to be careful of them, since Kamsa and his friends and advisors were all demons. Demons are always afraid of demigods. After being thus informed by Narada about the appearance of the demigods in different families, Kamsa at once became very much alarmed. He understood that since the demigod had already appeared, Lord Vishnu must be coming soon. He at once arrested both his brother-in-law Vasudeva and Devaki and put them behind prison bars. Within the prison, shackled in iron chains, Vasudeva and Devaki gave birth to a male child year after year. And Kamsa, thinking each of the baby to be the incarnation of Vishnu, killed them one after another. He was particularly afraid of the eighth child. But after the visit of Narada, he came to the conclusion that any child might be Krishna. Therefore, it was better to kill all the babies who took birth from Devaki and Vasudeva. This action of Kamsa is not very difficult to understand. In the history of the world, there are many instances in the history of the world of persons in the loyal order who have killed the father, brother, or whole family and friends for the satisfaction of their ambition. There is nothing astonishing about this, for members of the demoniac, greedy, loyal order can kill anyone for their nefarious ambitions. Kamsa was made aware of his previous birth by the grace of Narada. He learned that in his previous birth, he had been a demon of the name Kanamemi, and that he had been killed by Vishnu. Having now taken his birth in the Bhoja dynasty, he decided to become the deadly enemy of the Yadu dynasty. Krishna was going to take birth in that family, and Kamsa was very much afraid that he would be killed by Krishna, just as he had been killed in his last birth. He first of all imprisoned his father Ugrasena because he was the chief king among the Yadu, Bhoja, and Andaka dynasty. And he also occupied the kingdom of Surasena, Vasudeva's father. He declared himself the king of all such places. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the first chapter of Krishna, the advent of Lord Krishna. Jai Hari Bol. Thank you so much. I just stopped here. Thank you very much for coming. Gantraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhaktavinda ki jai. Oh, yes. Sorry, Maharaj. Vasudeva. Thank you, Maharaj.